2-1-2 break. Lead pass, Celebrini moving in, shoot, score!
NHL fans, give yourself some great looks this season and get Sharks tickets at Ticketmaster.
Will Smith in front, he scores!
As the official ticket marketplace of the Sharks in the NHL, Ticketmaster has a wide selection of tickets available for every game so you can catch all the action live.
Along the drive, great save by Askarov!
If your plans change, you can sell or transfer your tickets, and mobile tickets make it easy to get into the arena in time for puck drop. With Ticketmaster, you'll ensure that when they shoot, you'll score. Get tickets today at Ticketmaster.com/NHL.
Scott, it's a pleasure to chat with you. And I suppose when you're ranked number one in the NHL in any category, that's a great thing. Like standings are nice, power play, penalty kill, that's nice. But for the San Jose Sharks to be ranked with the number one prospect pool in the league, that probably suits their interest more than anything else.
For sure. That has been the priority. Building out this young group and sort of hitting the reset button has been the priority for Mike Greer and his amateur scouting staff over the last 2 years. And they've quickly, in a short period of time, really turned around the pool. The Sharks had a decent pool when Greer was brought on, but they've elevated it. And part of that is just drafting high and finishing low in the standings. And that's how you get a Will Smith and a Sam Dickinson and a Macklin Celebrini. But it's saying something that they're number one, and Macklin Celebrini wasn't even involved in my prospect pool ranking as well, right? So Celebrini considered a graduate now that he's played full time in the NHL. I did decide to include Will Smith in the criteria this year, even though he has played exclusively in the NHL this season, and that typically does exclude a player from the prospect pool rankings. But I just felt, because Will at the time of writing was still a 19-year-old, has obviously turned 20 now, but was still a 19-year-old, could have played at the World Juniors if they decided to send him, could have played in the AHL this year, and still feels, or at least earlier in the year, certainly felt like he was being developed at the NHL level, as now starting to find his groove and actually played some really good hockey the last month or so here. But it was a learning curve, and there were some up and downs for Will at this, in this sort of first third of the season there. So I felt that Will belonged, and really right after Will and Sam, you start to get into the list. They've obviously added Yaroslav Askarov. They have a little bit of everything. Will's a forward. Dickinson's a defenseman. Askarov's one of the best goalie prospects in the world, was actually my number one goalie prospect in my recent top 20 drafted goalie prospects ranking. So a lot to like about the pool. And then even beyond them, some serious depth. They've got guys who are ranked in the teens of my list who have actually played NHL games this year. Ethan Cardwell has played in the NHL. Jack Thompson's played in the NHL. Danil Gushchin has played in the NHL. So there's some depth there. There's some high-end talent there at every position. And there's a lot to like about now where they're trending as an organization and as a prospect pool. And they're going to be picking high again this year. So they'll add another player to that. There's reason to be up. I know there's a lot of talk of the future is teal in San Jose these days, but there is a reason to be optimistic about that actually being true.
So even if the Sharks were the number two or three ranked organization in terms of the prospect pool, that would be good too. But to be number one, I'm just curious, was it an easy number one? Were there other close competitors? How does it really stack up against other teams in these similar situations?
It's a good question. I really had five teams right at the top this year. I wasn't excited about the prospect pools that I had ranked kind of 6 to 12. Typically, there's a real top 10, but I actually think with the way that some of the graduations have happened around the league this year, that outside of there were really a core five group. So then it was just about, okay, 1 to 5, how do I want to slot them? And the more I watched tape, the more people I spoke to, whether it was coaches of these players, agents around the league, skills coaches, strength and conditioning coaches that work with these players, amateur scouts from within each of those five organizations, the further down the process that I went in terms of putting this list together ahead of the January countdown, it felt like the Chicago Blackhawks and the Detroit Red Wings were kind of 4-5, pretty crystallized as 4-5 for me. And then there was a clear top three. And I did debate ranking San Jose second or third with the other two teams in that top three, which were the Minnesota Wild and the Montreal Canadiens. But I think once I made the decision to include Will Smith, once they acquired Yaroslav Askarov, and Askarov looked like he did both in stretches in the NHL, but certainly with the Barracuda as well. Once Dickinson got off to the start that he did, once Musty even prior to his injury got off to the start that he did, once Luca Cagnoni had the camp that he did in the NHL, Cagnoni was excellent in his sort of NHL camp in the fall there, and has been very good for the Barracuda as well. It started to pile up, and it felt like the Sharks were the natural choice for number one.
And just to reiterate, they're number one without Celebrini, also without Shakir Makhmudulin. So all things considered,
Makhmudulin was close as well to being included. He obviously turned 23 in January. The cutoff is 23 for skaters and 25 for goaltenders. So Makhmudulin, we're talking, was 3 weeks away from being eligible for this.
You also mentioned the importance of having somebody like Yaroslav Askarov in this group. You said a star at every position. And I think that's so cool, even for San Jose, to have a goalie to come up with this group, because oftentimes I do feel like the trend in the NHL is develop your skaters, have some great forwards, have some great D, and then try and add in a complimentary goaltender at the end. That's always kind of the throw-in piece. But I feel like to acquire Askarov, how they did, all the hype surrounding him, the timing of this couldn't be better that he's with that group.
Definitely. The age and the timeline really fits for where Askarov is at. I think that was a huge part of the transaction for them and a huge part of the decision to really bet on Yaroslav Askarov as the goalie of the future. Without him, they would have been missing that. They've had a couple of guys, Magnus Krona and other guys, sort of come through their prospect pool over the last couple of years, but none that you felt confident really staking a claim on and saying this guy is not just going to be a future goalie in the NHL, but a future potential starter in the NHL. And Askarov feels like that. I think he's the best goalie prospect in the sport right now. There are some other high-end goalie prospects around the league. The Red Wings have two of them with Sebastian Kosa and Trey Augustine. Devin Levi is obviously a bright young goalie who's still trying to sort of cut his teeth and establish himself with the Buffalo Sabres. Michael Hrabal with Utah. There are some legit prospects. Jesper Wallstedt with the Minnesota Wild. There are some legit goalie prospects in the sport right now. But Askarov, his ability to stick with shooters, his athleticism, he's a freak athlete in terms of those stretch saves, the explosiveness going post to post, the speed and footwork in the net, his ability to stay on top of shooters. He plays with a bit of a hunch in his game. A lot of Russian goalies do. They play up and over the puck, over top of shooters, and it really allows them to be nimble on their feet and get down into their butterfly quickly. And there's just an athletic quality, a game-stealing quality. When Yaroslav Askarov is on, he can go on a run. Even prior to the trade, he had a run of 21 straight wins last year in Milwaukee in the AHL. Just one night after the next, was just winning every single night as a young goalie in the AHL. And before that, had runs like that internationally with the Russian national team at the U18 level before Russia was barred from competition. And even more recently in the KHL, and now with the Barracuda, he's played very well. And with the Sharks, he's had some big nights where he's stolen games. And I know the consistency with the Sharks hasn't quite been there, and the numbers have kind of hovered around 900 or just below 900. But I think he's the goalie of the future. Yeah. The Sharks are a work in progress in front of him at the NHL level right now, obviously. But once all of these guys start to come together, and once they're entering their primes together, I think you've got a really, really strong nucleus. And it's not just Celebrini. It's not just Askarov. It's Will Smith. It's Sam Dickinson. And then you sort of fit in around the edges with guys like Igor Chernyshov, who's having a phenomenal, phenomenal season now that he's back on the ice with the Saginaw Spirit in the OHL. Looks like immediately one of the best players in the OHL since his return. And I've spoken with the staff there, Dave Drinkel and Chris Lazary, the head coach and general manager with the Saginaw Spirit. They think Igor Chernyshov is a top nine winger all day in the NHL someday. So there's going to be layers to it. Not all of these kids are going to make it. A lot of them are going to be competing for a limited number of jobs. But Filip Bystedt, Igor Chernyshov, Colin Graf has started to come a little bit. Kasper Haltinen, if people will be familiar with if they've watched the last couple of World Juniors. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Haltinen also started his year with the Barracuda and was an OHL champion last year with the London Knights. So there's layers. There's a little bit of everything within the pool these days. And on top of it, as I alluded to off the top, they're going to add to that in this year's draft, quite likely next year's draft. And then from there, it'll be sort of fitting all the pieces together and building a really young, exciting team.
Maybe there might even be room for free agents at some point, too. Maybe that's also in the puzzle.
It's going up, and there's going to be money to spend.
You're right. You also, and I'm not going to give this away. I want this to remain in your piece so that people can be Excited to go check this out. It's on The Athletic. It's about a week or so old as we're doing this recording, so it's there still. But you actually divided all these prospects into three different tiers, 1 through 3, yep. 4 through 7, 8 through 15. And when I looked at it, I said, you know what? I never thought about it this way, but I think you've got it spot on. Was it easy to kind of tier those prospects, or was that difficult too?
No, it felt pretty natural with their pool. It can be tricky with some other organizations, but with the Sharks pool, it felt like, okay, you've got the three big boys at the top,
right,
in Smith, Dickinson, and Askarov. Those are your three premium
pieces. You just
pieces.
Gave it away. Come on.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm kidding.
Those are pretty obvious. Behind Macklin, Celebrini, those are your top dogs. Those are the guys that you expect to play at the very top of your lineup. And then you've got guys that you expect to play in the middle of your lineup and be impact players, maybe make $4 or $5 million a year instead of $8 to $10 million a year kind of thing. And then you've got guys that you're just hoping will fight and be competitive and give you good organizational depth and can be sort of depth players for you and role players for you and maybe fit onto your penalty killer, fit onto your second power play and give you a bit of a different look. So that's sort of the hierarchy that I felt sort of really developed naturally within their pool as I was sort of slotting the guys. And honestly, there might be one or two changes that the list came out a few weeks ago now. There might be one or two changes that I'd make, but they wouldn't be changes to those tiers. They would maybe be minor adjustments within the tiers in terms of where the players are slotting. I would probably have Igor Chernyshov ahead of Filip Bystedt based off the way that he's played in Saginaw. But the tiers feel pretty firm to me still.
Yeah. No, that's great. I thought that was a great way to look at it. Okay, so I know we've touched on a lot of these names, and I don't want to be too repetitive here, and this is kind of the last thing, but I do want to mention three particular names and things I read from your piece that I said, wow, that's either an eye-opener or I totally agree with that. On Sam Dickinson, you said one of the most productive D-men in junior hockey, averaging 30 minutes per game. Yeah, you read that right with the London Knights. 30 minutes per game, an offensive-minded defenseman. Is he basically Brent Burns all over again?
I don't think he quite plays with that sort of boldness that Brent Burns played with, but there is a little bit of that at times. And I've actually used sort of Brent Burns and a couple of others, not as comps, because I don't love sort of making one-to-one comps with these players because they're all so different. But I've used it at time with Sam. Coming into his draft process, he was a big sort of 6'3" defenseman. And the calling card of Sam Dickinson's game was this big, strong kid who was a phenomenal skater and could really use his legs to defend at a very high level. The real strength of Dickinson's game entering his draft year was his ability to defend one-on-one. That's still a major strength of Sam's game, his one-to-one transition D, his defending in zone. But last season, what began to emerge, and what I know in speaking with Sam and members of the London Knights about him, what really began to emerge with Sam last year was a more ambitious offensive game. He really started to use that skating to involve himself. He worked very hard to develop his shot and has now turned his shot, which wasn't a weapon as a 16-year-old, into a major weapon at 17 and 18 over the last two seasons. He scored 15, 20 goals a year in the OHL over the last two seasons, which is a big deal. And then this year has been a little bit at times a chicken with his head cut off. When you watch the London Knights play, he's just all over the ice and he's making plays.
So Burnsy.
A little bit. And that's where I was sort of circling back to it. It has gone more in that direction.
Yeah.
He's realized, I think, that he can take over games offensively with the puck on his stick, that he can carry pucks up ice, that he can jump deep into the offensive zone, that he can jump in transition. And he's doing a lot of it. I think at times too much of it. And I do wonder if at the NHL level, some of that will have to be reined back in a little bit. But you want that in your top players. You want your players being confident in themselves and going out to look to make plays and make things happen offensively. And Sam, with the way that he can skate and get up and down the ice and how big and strong he is and how the offensive tools have sort of come along to match the athletic ability that he's always had, there's a lot to get excited about now.
I'm with you. I don't really like one-to-one comps unless it's like blatantly obvious and it helps tell the story we know is true. Otherwise, it's a hard comparison. Two more. Quentin Musty, and obviously an interesting season for him. A lot of details in the start of it, but as we've seen him play, you said he's great along the wall and the cycle. He can also occasionally make a play that pulls you out of your seat. What do Sharks fans maybe need to know on the real deep level of Quentin Musty?
Well, he's been a player that's been talked about a lot over the last several years, even back to his decision not to go to the NTDP and play for USA Hockey and to instead go the OHL route with the Sudbury Wolves. He then has been sort of in and out of the good graces of USA Hockey. And I've been a firm believer all the way along that Quinton has a real opportunity to be a very good player. I know that he has impressed the Sharks at rookie tournaments and development camps and has played quite well in that setting. I think that had he not got injured, he belonged on the World Junior team over the last couple of years, whether or not he was on, or yeah, certainly he wasn't on the team in Gothenburg, and it was to be determined whether he was going to be invited to selection camp for this year's group in Ottawa. But I think on talent, he's one of the more talented players in his age group, has long been one of the more talented American players in his age group. There was talk sort of entering the NTDP age cycle of that age group that he was more talented than Will Smith and Gabe Perreau and Ryan Leonard and the guys who ended up getting picked at the very top of that draft on the American side. And I think because he wasn't a part of the NTDP and hasn't played at the World Juniors, he maybe hasn't gotten that shine. Mm-hmm. He's a very complicated player. He's not always been the most well-rounded or the most consistent player, but he's a 6'2", 6'3" winger who I still think cares deeply about being good and being competitive. I think he's been underrated by many. I think the conversation around him has gotten a little carried away at times. And on talent, he's got a chance to be a second line player in the NHL, yeah, and more than a third line player. Like, I think that's the level of pure talent that we're talking about with Quinton Mustie. So I've always been a big believer. I've gotten to know him through his agent and through this process a little bit. He's from Buffalo, and I know our Buffalo reporter has sort of gotten to know him a little bit. And I think he's emerged as a bit of a sleeper, despite having put up 100 plus points in the OHL and been one of the leading scorers in the OHL the last 2 years. It still feels like he maybe doesn't get the respect that he deserves as a prospect. And I think he's absolutely should be a part of the future fold for the San Jose Sharks. And I think he's one of, after those big three, I think he's one of the most talented young players that they have in their organization.
Well, last but definitely not least, you mentioned Igor Chernyshov and his season debut, his OHL debut. He's been racking up points to the tune of like, two or three a game on average. You said he plays a straight line game, individual skill and quick release to go at defenders, make plays off the rush or finish from the slot with a quick one touch shot in the zone. That sounds like a lot of different tools at his disposal, and we're seeing it already.
Yeah, he's a big 200-pound winger with a ton of skill who can fire the puck at an NHL level. And when you put that combination of tools together in the OHL, it's a recipe for filling the net, which is exactly what he's done. There was a little bit of conditioning that needed to happen. And I know he's not fully in talking to people in the organization. He's not fully maybe in game shape. He's been taking some short shifts early and late in game. He doesn't have his lungs fully back at the OHL level. But he's played alongside Michael Misa, and they've looked like the new dynamic duo in the OHL and one of the top lines in the OHL right away. Now, Michael Misa, who could be a future San Jose Shark because they're going to be picking at the very top of the draft, and Michael Misa is a likely top two or three pick in this year's draft. Michael Misa is one of the best players in the OHL and in junior hockey, so it helps to play on a line with the OHL's leading scorer. But Chernyshov, in his own right, has made some high-end skill plays, has ripped some pucks past goalies early on in the OHL, and has looked like a dominant player at that level. And he is another one, like Mustie. Had Russia participated in the last couple of World Juniors, I think he might have a little bit more cachet, a little bit more prestige as a prospect, because he would have been a big part of the Russian national team. He would have been on a big stage. He probably would have scored some big goals, and people would have seen the package, which is this sort of 205, 210-pound winger already who can get up and down the ice and shoot the puck and make plays and has hands. So a lot to like about Chernyshov. I think both he and Mustie have a chance to be sort of more second line guys than middle six guys. And that would, behind Celebrini and Smith, that could really move the needle for them in the future.
Scott, you do great work. Your knowledge, your depth, this is so impressive. It's so helpful for all of us to really get this observation from you. I appreciate it. Maybe we can chat again, I don't know, after the draft lottery, something like that.
Anytime.
Awesome. Thank you.